Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare.
After.
Kunja Vihare Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Vradhare. Gopi jana balabha giri varadhari. Jasoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Jasoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Jamuna tira vanachari. Jamuna tira vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Madhava. Gopi jana ballabha giri varadhari. Jasoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Jasoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Jamuna tira vanachari. Jamuna tira vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihare. Jaya Vishnu Padparamahamsa. Hari Vidagachara Jasta Tarasata Si Srimadas Divine Grace Si Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Kid Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Kid Grantha Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Kid Sambhita Bhakta Vrinda Kid Nitai Gopimanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guruji Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 64. Nanu Bhutam Kvachanena Dehi nadrishtam ashrutam kadachit upalabhyeta Yadrupam Yadrig Atmani. Nanubhutam Kvachanena. Dihinadrishtam Ashutam. Kadachit Upalabhyeta. Yad rupam yadrig atmani. Nanubhutam kuchanina. Dihinadrishtam ashutam. Ladies, please. Nanubhutam kvachanena. Na, never, adbhutam, experienced, kva, at any time, cha, also, anena dehena, by this body, adrishtam, never seen, ashrutam, never heard, kadachit, sometimes, upalabhyeta, may be experienced. Yet, which, rupam, form, yadrik, whatever kind, atmani, in the mind. Translation, sometimes we suddenly experience something that we never experienced. In the present body, by sight or hearing. Sometimes we see such things suddenly in dreams. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In dreams, we sometimes see things that we have never experienced in the present body. Sometimes in dreams, we think that we are flying in the sky, although we have no experience of flying. Listen to this. This means that once in a previous life, either as a demigod or an astronaut, we flew in the sky. Astronaut. Previous life. Maybe. The impression is there in the stockpile of the mind. And it suddenly expresses itself. It is like fermentation taking place in the depths of water, which sometimes manifests itself in bubbles on the water's surface. Sometimes we dream of coming to a place we have never known or experienced in this lifetime, but this is proof that in the past life we experienced it. The impression is kept within the mind and sometimes becomes manifest either in dream or in thought. The conclusion is, you ready for the conclusion? It's right in the middle of the purport. The conclusion is that the mind is the storehouse of various thoughts and experiences undergone during our past lives. Thus, there is a chain of continuation from one life to another, from previous lives to this life, and from this life to future lives. This is also sometimes proved by saying that a man is born a poet, a born scientist, or a born devotee. If, like Maharaj Ambarish, we think of Krishna constantly in this life, Savayamana Krishna Padaravindayo, we will certainly be transferred to the kingdom of God at the time of death. Even if our attempts to be Krishna conscious is not complete, our Krishna consciousness will continue in the next life. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 6:41. Prapya punya kritam lokan utsitva shashvati sama suchinam srimitam gehe yoga brashto brajayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich or aristocracy. Just like all of us, right? Born into families of rich aristocracy. If we rightly follow the principles of meditation, this is a paragraph, final paragraph, one sentence, saying the same thing that was already said. If we rightly follow the principles of meditation on Krishna, there is no doubt that in our next life we will be transferred to Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan. Want a ticket? There's the counter, right up there. Pick up your ticket. Nanu bhutam kva chanena dehe na drashtam ashrutam kadachit upalabhyeta yad rupam yadrig atmani. Sometimes we suddenly experience something that we never experienced in the present body by sight or hearing. Sometimes we see such things suddenly in dreams. It's a very subtle machinery and infallible. The machinery of the mind acting on our present level of awareness and similarly also acting to impel activity. That's been discussed previously. And it's going to be discussed again. The mind, the desires of the mind and the thoughts and thinking, feeling, willing is the impetus for action. So whatever it is, I gave the example the other day about a chair. So before there was this chair, there was an idea. And then the particular shape of the chair, there was someone who designed it before they made it. Before there was the chair, there was the thought, there was the subtle event. So there's, this is a nice section. I mean, what's just one appreciation, something that I remember hearing from Srila Prabhupada long, long ago was, now it's being described here. But Prabhupada said, you can't dream of something you haven't already experienced. So whatever is in the dream, you know, a violent dream or a lusty dream or a pleasant dream or a whatever it is dream, there's something back there, something in this life or previous life, that there's an impression. The way that it works is something like data storage. Looking at Avella because he knows a lot about computers. So the senses are extending. They're subtle senses, but senses extend into the realm of matter. Subtle senses, and something is perceived. And that so hearing, smelling, tasting, that impression goes to the mind. So it's like Prabhupada describes it as a photo file. Take a picture, so the image is there, and it's stored subtly. It's fantastic. If Microsoft ever figured out how to do one of these, how to make a mind that can store information subtly, huge, whatever you call it, gigabytes, huge storage, and it just sits there in the photo file or the image file, the mental impression file. Tick, tick. So time moves, and as time moves, in different ways in which Krishna has time move, at some point in time, it's reaction time. And so it's just sitting there, dormant, innocent, and then, tick, tick, time comes for it to fructify, and it comes into the presence, conscious awareness state of mind. So whether we're asleep and it comes as a dream, or we're awake and it comes as a thought, or you're chanting, you don't know where it came from, but from somewhere something comes into your mind. Where'd that come from? Get away. And trying to pay attention to Krishna, it just doesn't get away. So it's just a stored impression, that the action reaction. So Prabhupada gives a comparison, fermentation, and after some time a bubble may rise, so to the surface of water. We've probably all had this experience standing by the side of a pond or a lake. I can picture that in my mind many times. We had a Gurukul community at one point in time in Lake Huntington, New York. Didn't last. But one of the things that was there was a little pond, and I remember the image is very clear, standing at the edge of the pond and watching. Suddenly, you know, a little bubble comes working its way to the top of the surface of the water. It stays there for a few moments, and then boop, and it bursts, and then little ripples come out. And just wait a while, and then another one comes, and sometimes a few come, a little stream comes, you know, a few bubbles at a time. It's because there's, whatever you, the right way to say it, organic material that's in the sediment and the mud in the bottom, and it's fermenting. And whatever it is, carbon dioxide or something, is being, or methane or whatever it is being generated. And it's because it's under the mud, it just sits there, but it grows and it grows, and enough pressure, and so it breaks open the mud and it rises to the surface. And then you, supposing you took a stick and you swirled the mud around, you get a whole lot of gas evaporating, or not evaporating, rising to the surface all at once. And that's, compare that little visual image to something that we do, and it's called devotional service. Because we have all these stored impressions of stuff. You know, impressions of going back who knows how many lifetimes, stored in the mind, and just waiting for the tick, 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 for something to fructify, according to whatever the plan is that Krishna has. And how he moves the time energy. And then, so for one who's not a devotee, what happens is it comes as a desire. I want, fill in the blank. And then, not knowing what's going on, that desire then becomes a contemplation, and the contemplation becomes an action, and you get material activity based upon stored impressions from a previous lifetime. It may even be in a different species, like this example. Commonly, Prabhupada would refer to flying in the sky. I don't know why he picked that. Maybe he had dreams of flying in the sky. I had dreams of flying in the sky. And I was wondering, how did I get it? It was, you know, the backyard of a place where we used to live, and I would flying in the sky. So then I heard Prabhupada say, flying in the sky, and you saw the backyard. And so you put the two together. That's dreams. It's not just one impression, it's multiple impressions, and he described you splice them. This and this. You know, the physical film was, you know, how you splice film. Now it's digital, you just put layer on layer, and you get a dream where you're flying in the sky, seeing something. Because at one point you flew in the sky, and at one point we saw something, and you put the dream. Like his example is Golden Mountain. There's no Golden Mountain. But you've seen gold, and you've seen a mountain, and in your dream you see a Golden Mountain. Like that. Splice, you synthesize, put them together. You can't dream of something you haven't already experienced. And you can't think a thought about something you haven't experienced. Well, that's interesting, you know, especially when it comes to spiritual reality. How can you think of Krishna? But before we get to Krishna thought, just I remember reading in, you know, freshman philosophy class, I believe it was Plato, his whole big thing on the realm of absolutes. He inductively reasoned that, you know, before the chair there was the thought of chair, and where did the thought of chair come from? There must be a place where there is chair. It may not be this one, but to have the thought, there's a realm where there's chair. And that's an absolute realm. He inductively reasons there must be a realm of the absolute. And he uses a chair for getting there. So to have the thought of a chair, to have the thought of anything, there's some prior experience. That's how the mind works. So, thought of God. Even if people say there isn't God, you know, the atheists say there isn't God. Where'd the thought of God come from anyways? Where'd the thought come from? Even if you want to say there isn't. why are we even talking about it? How did that come to be that we're talking about it? Whether there's God or not God. There's some prior experience. Otherwise, we can't even have the thought. And then the action. Anyway, so our process, cheto, darpanam, marjanam, the cleansing of the mirror of the mind results in experiencing things in the mind that sometimes are very surprising, sometimes they're embarrassing, sometimes they're shocking, sometimes they're phenomenal. But it's because it's purification. It's stirring the mud at the bottom of the pond, and all the gas comes out. You just keep stirring and keep stirring and keep chanting and keep chanting, and if chanting is done properly, the mind then goes to Krishna, not just to the stored impressions in the mind. Keep chanting, keep chanting. Bring the mind to Krishna, that the purifying agent. So that's one way to think of chanting. It's Krishna is a cleanser. And we're using the cleanser to cleanse the dirty mind. But another way to think of it is it's the natural activity of the mind. It's the primordial, constitutional, natural activity for the mind to think of Krishna. To sing Krishna's name, to speak about Krishna. It's the healthy state of the soul, the natural position of the soul. So that's just what Prabhupada does, obviously, is he takes it to the Krishna conscious platform, which is where Narada wants to go also with the king. But the king, he's still addressing the question. The king asked, if you do an activity in a previous body, and now we're in a different body, and that body is altogether gone, what's the continuity of fruitive activity from one lifetime? It's the medium is the mind. And this is one of those things, that a thought or desire or something comes into the mind. And how the clock, how time works, just like people will say, you know, children are innocent, and Prabhupada would say no. Because to get a body, they did something in their previous life to get them one of these things. And one of these things is a flag that says, I'm envious of Krishna. You don't get one unless you have envy of Krishna. So it's not innocent. And then, you know, further, tick, 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 and then adolescence comes, and then something happens in adolescence. Just the biological clock. But then things that one didn't even consider in this lifetime arise. It's just from an impression from a previous lifetime. And the biological clock and time moving and awakening those desires. Prabhupada is making reference here to someone who's born, a born poet, or a born scientist, or a born devotee. Do you remember the letter that Prabhupada wrote about John Lennon in his previous life was some kind of a musician? Huh? I remember when he said he was a musician. You remember when he said he was a doctor? Pious person. Something happened in between his pious person and how it ended. Bad association. He said what?
A horrible death.
Prabhupada said.
Yeah, because I think he offended Prabhupada. That's what Shama Sundar said, but he wasn't quite sure.
That Prabhupada said that you will die a horrible death?
Yeah. After when he came out, and then Shama Sundar was there.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Well, okay. He became a little degraded too by bad association. one devotee, that's a few years ago, sent me a YouTube clip of a little girl, I mean, maybe a little bit bigger, little girl singing opera. No, she didn't have any opera lessons. She was just singing opera with all the vibrato and all the, you know, skill and so on. Certain persons, certain souls, the evidence of their previous lifetime is immediately evident. Even their, you know, they haven't been through all of life yet. Just that they have in their previous life they have, and it's just coming out. So although we can't, I was just hearing Prabhupada speaking about this. It was yesterday hearing him. It's really nice listening to Prabhupada's recorded conversations and classes. He was discussing this point that the mind is not visible, but it's ruling that which is visible. And it's ruling, it's prakriti. Subtle prakriti rules grosser prakriti. So that you can, you know, there is an alternative. It's not just you go along for the ride because there's no choice. You got on board and that's it. You're locked, strapped in. There is an alternative. And that's, as Jai Jagannath was raising the question yesterday, one can place oneself in the care of the internal potency. And with the internal potency, there's still impressions, but then, you know, those impressions are the primordial ones, the original ones, the constitutional ones. And as thoughts carry one to the next physical body, spiritual thoughts or Krishna conscious thoughts carry one to Krishna. It's not a surprise. It's completely understandable, reasonable, predictable. And Krishna confirms it. You fix your mind upon me, surely you will come to me. And that's our lesson here. The next verse, he's just saying this, it's practically saying the same thing as this verse, or at least the statement that Prabhupada makes. The impression is kept within the mind and sometimes becomes manifest either in dream or in thought. And it's the same thing as the next verse. Therefore, my dear king, the living entity who has a subtle mental covering develops all kinds of thoughts and images because of his previous body. Take this from me as certain. There is no possibility of concocting anything mentally without having perceived it in the previous body. So it's nothing new. Punak punash charvita charvananam, chewing the chute. Chewing it again and chewing it again. It's childlike. It's embarrassing. It's foolish. Who would, you know, there's some chewed gum and you, oh, look at this, and you start chewing an already wad of chewed gum that's dried up and yuck. Who's going to do that? People are doing it all the time in material life. It's just the same thing again. Self-perpetuating, perpetual motion machine. Just because of the laws that are governing prakriti and the superintendence of the personality of Godhead. But he doesn't want us to do this. He wants us to stop the foolish program. So we have to hear what the alternative is. And it's a little hard to hear sometimes, but you keep trying to hear
and that can connect you to the path to Krishna. So we've been having lots of questions in the morning, so I'm going to end early and see if there's some questions, discussion.
Thank you, Maharaj. We are to think of Krishna constantly. I was wondering, in our Christian upbringing or Judeo, in our Western upbringing of God, to think of God, you had nothing very specific to focus upon.
Right.
No nam, rup, guna, or lila.
Right.
With Krishna, we do have all those aspects, but oftentimes our focus and our stage of development is more the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, understanding these very subtle subject matters.
That's fine.
And so is that also not different from thinking
sure.
of Krishna?
Yes. It's as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one's worshipping me with their intelligence. The intelligence needs to be purified so that you got the right target. You could have an idea of Krishna. People have ideas of Krishna that's way off. So it needs to be, you know, guided by intelligence. The mind needs to go to Krishna properly, needs to be guided and with purified intelligence. So it's also part of that process, for sure. Yeah.
Important is it to come to a more specified remembrance of Krishna?
How is it important to do what?
How important is it as we're moving forward in our Krishna conscious life, how important is it to come to a more specified remembrance of Krishna?
Specified?
Yeah, specified means, the verse that I'm remembering when I say that is at the end of the third chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Advaita Acharya calls summoning the Supreme Lord to the material world. And the verse is mentioning how the Supreme Lord reciprocates with the devotee in the particular form in which he thinks of him.
Sure. Well,
so I was wondering kind of about that.
It's not artificial, it's natural. It's one point. Just this morning I was listening to a morning walk conversation with Professor Durkheim and Prabhupada. And he got into specific, you know, Christians sometimes say, I have heard from my discussions with Christians, they sometimes say that God does not have a name. And then he went, you know, six times back and forth over that with Professor Durkheim. But Christ says, hallowed be thy name. So there is a name. So why do they say there's no name? And he just, you know, six times. Then it was, his name is Krishna. So why don't they take, why do you have objection to chanting Krishna? It's specific. Why won't they take? And then Durkheim said, well, they say, you know, Jesus, Jesus. And he said, what gentleman is going to say, chant my name? Now, Christ didn't say chant his name. He said, chant God's name. And if the answer is they don't know what God's name is, well, here's God's name in authorized scripture. So take God's name. And just, you know, it was for like 10 minutes, and then finally Prabhupada said, I'm speaking like this to you because you are a writer, and you please write like this. Because Durkheim said, I don't have any objection. He said, yes, but there are people that have objection, and you're literary. So specific comes natural. It starts with, we just accept Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Who knows what that is when we just begin? It's just a mantra. But then it becomes specific, and it's not by something artificial. It's certainly by something personal, but not, as Prabhupada says, an artificial imposition on the mind. It's not like we have to, like, bring the mind around and think specific. It's natural, rather. It's natural. And it happens. Like some devotees, they like worshiping Lord Nrisimhadev. They're, you know, Krishna devotees, and they like worship. And it wasn't something. Okay, as Lord Nrisimhadev, it just came to them very naturally, and it's fine. And it should, my sense is, it should be like that. Not something artificial. When that's, it's like growing something in your garden. When you grow something, you know, okay, come on, hurry up. You know, it grows at its own time, in its own way, naturally. Just provide and that's exactly what Prabhupada is saying here in simple language. If we rigidly follow the principles of Krishna, meditation on Krishna, that's where our attention should go. And the specific comes naturally by maturing in following the principles of meditation on Krishna rigidly, properly, carefully, attentively. The attention goes to the bhajana kriya, not to the, you know, bhava and prema. It goes to the bhajana kriya, properly performing the watering of the creeper of bhakti. Attraction for Krishna will grow in specific ways, in specific rasa, etc. Does that help? Yes.
In terms of dreams, well, one comment, there's also a lot of places in the Psalms where...
A lot of places where?
In the Psalms of the Old Testament. How majestic is thy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Many, many places.
A reference to the name in the Old Testament.
Yes, not okay. Giving a name, but...
Yeah,
us
reference to it.
Name.
Okay.
Yes. In terms of dreams, what is the pragmatic value in terms of our purification or our advancement?
Not much. Don't place so much value in dreams, in other words. If it's a dream of something mundane, you know, it's just like water in a river going downstream. You just let it go. You don't. And if it's something in relation to Krishna, this is Prabhupada's instruction, very simple. Don't try to interpret the dream or what's the meaning or some instruction coming or something like that. Rather, there's some mercy being shown. That's all. That's all. During Prabhupada's time, there was a particular devotee, whose name I won't mention, who had regular dreams of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada instructed me this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, he got on a bandstand and started saying, Prabhupada instructed me this, that, and the other thing. And of course it went back to Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada didn't chastise the devotee. He just said like this: we don't place much value in, you know, those kinds of things, rather that there's some mercy. That's all. You don't need, you know, full stop.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you. Sorry, the sun was the sun was in my eyes. I had to just adjust. So yesterday you were warning pretty strongly against trying to predicate the mind of the spiritual master. So I also found I have this tendency with practically everyone trying to predicate the mind, thinking, oh, he's thinking like this, or he's doing this because of this.
Motivations.
It's very active tendency, and I was just hoping you could give some suggestion how to like dovetail that in a Krishna conscious...
No, you don't dovetail. You just take a little water and sprinkle a little water on the fire. The water of good instructions. Place your attention elsewhere. Place your attention upon... Krishna, and you know, something simple, humble service to Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Na sate vijate bhavo, na bhavo vijate sata. Do like that. Withdraw from over there and place over here. You take that same energy, just redirect it. If that's sensitive. Some things you just can't use in Krishna's service. You know, just not. Don't speculate. You can't use it in Krishna's service. So take that energy and redirect the energy towards just some humble service to that devotee or devotees, or just redirect. When that energy comes, redirect it. Here's a visual image. You spill some water and there's a puddle, and it starts to glob over this way. All you have to do is make a little line and it goes that way. Just make a line a few times, and all that, instead of globbing over that way, it goes where you want it to go, you know, towards the drain or something like that. Just so if there's this energy that's happening, just take it where you want it to go. Something that's clearly for Krishna and, you know, beneficial, and doesn't take you into some mumbo jumbo, jumbled up, you know, you get lost in a maze of complexity. Devotional service is simple. So do something that's just very basic and simple. And you keep doing and keep doing, and just, and it just becomes natural. Instead of going there, it goes here. And that's engaging the intelligence to direct the mind towards that which will elevate consciousness and elevate the soul, rather than doing some battle over here. It's an unending battle. You know, the Prakriti just keeps doing the Prakriti program. It's just nonstop. So give the mind some positive engagement. There's some energy. Take that energy over here. Something else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I had a question when you were describing how this process of devotional service is like stirring up the sediment so that all of these past impressions sort of rise to the surface, at least in a more gross or explicit way.
Well, just a little editing. It's sure. Not so that, it's just that's what happens. It's not purposeful. It's not like I want a big muddy mess in the pond, but that's what happens. Instead of a delayed, time-bound thought that's impelling some action, it's just all these different thoughts. Like the example, another example is cleaning a room that hasn't been cleaned and all the dust is flying all over the place. So it's not, your purpose is not to get the dust flying all over the place. It's just that's what happens when you're cleaning. So go ahead.
So I wanted to ask what the result of that is, because doesn't that seem then more overwhelming when all these impressions are rising to the surface versus this very slow, gradual? I guess maybe I'm getting thrown by the analogy.
Well, the punchline of your question is what? How do we handle the situation? Is that your question?
I guess so, because at least how I was visualizing the example you were giving.
Yeah.
It's a very slow bubble. But in the process of devotional service,
the slow bubble program is it continues and continues and continues and continues eternally. Because there's always something organic that falls into the lake and it settles to the bottom and it sits and ferments and it makes bubbles. Eternally. And our program is, we don't want to, we're saying no thank you. I want to go to Krishna. So this is how I look at it. There's a price we have to pay for our indulgence in the mood of trying to be separate enjoyer. The price is these impure thoughts. Or if you just like distracting thoughts. Doesn't have to be, you know, ugly ones, just distracting thoughts. That's the price we have to pay. Just don't, two things. Don't continue doing it, and you tolerate those things. At least, you know, that's it. Tungs tatiksha swabharata. Just tolerate. And invest your energy in something else. That which is eternal. Bring your thoughts. That's how you handle it. I'm paying the price for my foolishness. I take responsibility for the foolishness. It's coming. I accept it. That's Lord Brahma's prayer. I accept. But let my mind not budge an inch from the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. So that's what you do. That's how you handle it. And it doesn't necessarily come all at once. It can come in, you know, little dribbles if, you know, if Krishna wants it. Or it can come all at once. Or it can be some of both, and it's whatever Krishna wants. Whatever Krishna wants. Let my mind not budge one inch from that determination of staying at his lotus feet, engaging in his service and remembrance of him. That's how we handle it. You have an online question? Your question, all right.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In the beginning, it seems like that Krishna consciousness is very easy.
It's very easy. Yeah. And but, then?
But when the steering start and all the baggage came, it becomes very difficult. And sometimes we cannot handle the baggage.
It's not difficult, we're just lazy. It's not difficult. Material life is difficult. It's Maya trying to say, I'm going to beat you up if you go to Krishna. And the devotee that's determined that says, you can't touch me. I don't place value in you. I place value in Krishna. It's when we place value in, you know, things that have no, they're illusory. That's easy to say. And it's another thing when you're passing through it, but that's what's going on. Because we've so heavily invested in illusion. When illusion is pulling, oh, it's difficult. It's not. You know, what's our value system? Say it differently. Same thing differently. Krishna never gives us a test that we cannot pass. Krishna may give us some cleansing, purifying exam, but there's a very nice purport where Prabhupada speaks like this, but Krishna at the same time gives one the strength to go beyond, you know, the difficulty. The purport is in relation to Vamana speaking about Bali Maharaj. I'll find it and send it to you. It's a nice one. I may even have sent it out in one of those things I send out. But Bali, Vamana is glorifying Bali Maharaj. Just see what a devotee this Bali Maharaj is. This thing, that thing, the other thing, and you know, I spoke badly, and I tied him up, and I said he's not following Dharma, and I, you know, all these sufferings, and he never once budged from the truth. This devotee is so incredible. I'll be his gatekeeper. I'll be his personal servant. I'll protect him. In other words, and in the purport, Prabhupada speaks like this. That Krishna may, for a devotee, put the devotee in some situation that seems, whatever you called it, difficult. But at the same time, because that devotee is determined, I'm not going to depart from Krishna's service, Krishna gives the intelligence and the strength to overcome that difficulty at the same time. It's to glorify the devotee. It's not frivolous or capricious or, you know, why is Krishna doing this? He wants the full shelter of the devotee in him. He's helping the devotee get free from the entanglement of attachments to illusion. It's his mercy. And take it that way. Take shelter. Whatever today is very difficult for you, tomorrow you have, or, you know, as you further progress in Krishna consciousness, there'll be other situations that you compared to today is child play. In other words, the entanglement is very, very deep, and Krishna doesn't put us through some situation that we can't handle. He gives us the strength to handle it according to our capacity. It's mercy. It's love. Because somewhere inside there's a desire that says, I want to be with Krishna. And there's something else, there's a desire that says, I want my entanglements. I'm attached to a certain set of them, at least. And some of them, they very easily go. And some of them, we hold on to. That's the difficulty. So Krishna very kindly relieves us. You get the picture.
Sometimes while handling the situation, it happens like you'll become a offensive towards the devotee who is guiding you, is helping you. So how to protect to avoid those situations?
The answer that I gave over here is the same answer that applies over what you just asked. Here comes this energy. I know it's not appropriate, either of them. It's not appropriate. Now what do I do with that energy? Let me redirect it. Don't hesitate. Don't linger and watch the fireworks. Immediately. Go to that which you invest that energy in something that's appropriate. And cultivate. Just keep moving your finger along that line, and there goes the water. It starts going that way. It's the energy of the mind that's conditioned. That rebelliousness is a rebelliousness toward Krishna. That's what it is. Envy is an envy toward Krishna. And that's what we're in a very toxic. So don't be surprised when that arises, but immediately go to the other position. And keep just as many times as you have to move your finger. You just continue. And know that that's the healthy, natural state of the soul. And the other is this toxic one. Don't indulge. Say no to Maya. Say yes to Krishna. And keep saying yes to Krishna. Keep saying no to Maya. His practice like that, right behind you.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj, it seems like it would be much easier to control the ebbs and flows of the mind and also where it goes if we simply start relishing the fact that we get to serve devotees, the fact that we get to be in their association. So how do we develop that kind of relish?
By doing it. And the verses that we heard, the arms go in the air and the legs dance and the mouth is, we do those things. That's the sadhana part, and the joy will come naturally. Just and you contemplate on the good fortune. It's like Shikshastakam, the first two verses, the Mahima section, what the holy name is. But unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction. Right? So then goes the third verse of Shikshastakam. So go there. Trinadapi Suniche. So go there. Tororivasahishnana. Invest there. Just hang out in Shikshastakam 3. And it's just joyful. Materially, spiritually, very joyful. Cultivate that. And the joyfulness is there. And then the joyfulness dispels the darkness. Or the distracting stuff. Yes? Hey, Mungi.
My question is still not very, I may not be able to articulate very clearly. You made two statements in your class. One was that Prabhupada said children are not innocent. Prabhupada said children are not innocent. They do come with their past desires, the tendencies. And the other statement at the end of the class you made is chewing the chew. Who would want to pick that up? What I wanted to ask you is that children do have this tendency of enjoyment that they're getting from their past life. And in this life, being in a community, every family may not have the same standard.
Every what? Every family may not have the same standard.
Is it?
Every family may not have the same standard.
Standard. So, I feel that watching cartoons and video games, they're all part of the chewing the chew program.
It's worse.
Yes. So, and it's interesting that each family, when you personally talk to them, they say that they let their children do it in moderation because the other children are doing.
Sure.
So, and if there is unwillingness on the part of a community to come together, and work towards a common standard. What is one supposed to do as somebody? Like, I find that I'm also guilty of that, doing certain things in moderation. I know that moderation program doesn't work. And each parent will say, "I'm doing it because my child is saying his friends are doing, her friends are doing," but it's the same story in each family. And when I tell them, let's come together and as a community work on this, there is a kind of resistance.
Well, two or three things. This is perennial. It's not, to fix that problem, you need to go to the spiritual world. Another comment is, birds of a feather flock together, but a problem, so persons that, parents who have similar vision can share and establish a standard, but it's to expect that everyone will, if you want something that everyone shares the same standard, the people on this end and the people on that end are not going to be satisfied. So they're going to make choices and they're going to make choices. So we don't want groupism, we want wholesome and respect. So some you wish to let the reins go loose. That here's a line, that there's a certain line. It's just, but we're not looking down our nose at you because we're going to do this, but we want to raise our children with this standard. Because you're also a devotee, and you have a vision that says, look, our kids go to school, they see this stuff all the time, if we just said no to them, they're going to rebel against us. And that's their way of looking at it, and okay. I'm not going to go that way, but I respect that you wish to do that. We're going to do something else. Now then you have, so what's required is our children make rational choices. I don't want to do that. And here's why I don't want to do that. I mean, our kids do this all the time. About what they do, you know, they're in the public school. Many of them, most of them. And they see all kinds of stuff that would knock your socks off. Just to like, wow, you see that, you hear that, you experience that. Whoa. How do you process it? Well, I don't want anything to do with any of that. Although it's in their face. I don't want anything. So there's a, like Himanshu's comment, you know, there's a happiness that they're experiencing. And there's also some intelligence that says, why I don't want to do that. You know, where does that take one? I don't want to go there. So, although they're children, this is Kali Yuga, and you know, stuff is in their face. So, it's besides our own community, you know, the parenting is a perennial topic. If we were Amish or Amish, you know, that's a standard, and we're Hare Krishnas, and you know, we have. This is like, you know, his brahmachari question on Sunday, according to suitability. According to suitability. So, you know, education, very important. Standards, at least standards that those of us who wish to have our children grow in Krishna consciousness this way, we some number of us agree on our standards. And then there's certain things, and then there's others that have, you wish to have a different standard. So we're not against you or looking down upon you either way, but you know, there's diversity. But you know, and then here's a line. Like, you know, something that comes to my mind right now is a dress code for boys and girls. You know, some things are just not okay. Just not okay. Without, you know, giving examples. And there's some things that are broader that we can all agree on. And then there's some other standards like video games and stuff that just, you know, there are a number of us, we don't want to have that at all. We understand that you have another perspective. Let's share our perspective with you, and maybe you want to tighten it up a little bit. But, you know, the in moderation, where does moderation go? Where's the line? Where moderation is more than moderation, or involvement is more than moderation. And it's weird, you know, half an hour of TV a week or something, or whatever it is, and only certain kinds of shows, and you know, it doesn't work in moderation.
One parent shared with me, and even I face this, that our children understand very easily when they see those kids who are not practicing Krishna consciousness, when they do certain things.
I'm well aware of the dilemma. And then it's the children in Krishna consciousness, yes, that do those things. Whoa. But it's not just children, it's adults too.
Adults, yeah.
It's the same program.
So how to help a child not to become judgmental and...
By not being judgmental and being yourself, ourselves, the adults, and by explaining. This is the value system that we embrace because... And then, you know, you discuss it so that it's, you know, they're not, their intellect is not as developed as an adult, but certain things they can understand. I'm sure you have the experience. And at least if the principle is understood and voluntarily accepted, not just, you know, when mom and dad aren't around, I'm going to do what I want to do. But when they're not around, I'm going to keep the standard because I understand why. And children will be children, and so on, playful, and you know, but understand the principle, because that's an asset that will merit them or stay with them through their young adult life and their adult life, where they're going to make decisions that are principle based on how they're going to do what they're going to do. Not just because there's a standard and there's a rule, because Kali Yuga is advancing. I mean, I've known this discussion for 30 years. Where in educators, where they say, you know, as water seeks the lowest level, children also. If there's something that one kid is doing, then commonly children will say, well, how come I can't do that? Because they're doing it, especially as a devotee, not just, you know, a non-devotee, but a devotee. They're doing it. Why can't I do it? Because water seeks the lowest level. And then there has to be some, well, let's step back a bit from the whole picture and say, where does this go? Where does this path take you? Let's look down the path and see what it looks like. Where does the path of moderation take somebody? Or the path of time wasting? And then let's take a look at where not time wasting takes one. What do you think? What do you see? Which one do you want? And that's why we have this standard. We don't do that, because that's where it takes you, and we want this because where it takes you. The happiness is real happiness. And the love of a relationship with others that are with Krishna at the center, that's what real happiness and real love is. We don't want that other one. What do you think? Not just, okay, you know, say yes and sign up. But what do you think? Well, it's okay when I'm sitting next to you, but when I get with my friends, and you know, it's another thing starts to happen. Okay, well, let's take a look at that one. Where does it go? The same, you know, different variety. So by training the discriminating faculty, the intelligence is the faculty of discriminating this from that. So if it's on the platform of the senses and the mind, where does that take you? If your intelligence goes to sleep. So how do we keep our intelligence? Let's talk about it. How do we keep that discriminating faculty going, even when we're in the midst of, you know, this other kids that don't have that same value? Because that's life. We're always in circumstances where people have different values. I was having a discussion with my older brother just yesterday. And he was saying, you know, basically, you know, I said, he was wanting me to do something that I haven't been doing. And I said, you know, we have a different value system, different set of things that we value in life. He said, that's okay, you should accept mine. I mean, you know, he didn't say that, but that's... It's okay, but you should accept mine, at least this one. So, how am I? Because I don't want to disrespect. He's my older brother. But you know, my there's something that's above that. I'm not going to disrespect my brother, but I'm not going to adopt his value system. So that how you train a child, or how you train a soul, it's more than intellectual, because there's the senses, the mind, and the intelligence is what we value. But then people have different values. So it has to go more deeply to the soul. That's the challenge of delivering a dependent from the cycle of birth and death. And, you know, they're going to have to make decisions, discriminate, and be guided by, you know, something that touches the soul. Now, certainly, you know, the affection of the child to the parent is very strong. But then also the senses and mind are very strong. So, you know, the intelligence has to govern. And back to what Himanshu said, you know, the happiness of the soul has to be something that one experiences. And there's something that can take us there. And you gradually, you train the child or the adult or whoever in your care, the bhakta in the bhakta program or whatever it is, the congregation member or whatever, touch the soul. And this the soul's moving toward Krishna, making decisions. Anyway, this is a lovely topic. You want to read it? You want? Okay. You know which one I was referring to? Okay. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai! Here it is. That Bali Maharaj endured all these severe tests and austerities is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. The tests, and that he endured. The Lord certainly appreciates the devotee's forbearance, and it is recorded for the future glorification of the devotee. This was not an ordinary test. As described in this verse, hardly anyone could survive such a test. But for the future glorification of Bali Maharaj, one of the Mahajans, the Supreme Personality of God, had not only tested him, but also gave him the strength to tolerate such adversity.